Morning. Today's daf from Bava Metzia is Samach Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf is on the Zecher Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We start today in Samach Aleph Amud Beis, but towards the bottom of the Amud at the two dots, Ezu Tarbis Amar Bebeperes Ketalacha Chitim Himenu Bediner Zahav, the heading of the Mishnah. Let's take a look back at the Mishnah for a moment. Samach Amud Beis, the beginning of the fifth parak of Bava Metzia. The Mishnah introduces us to the topic of Ribbis, of the Yisra in the Torah of charging interest on a loan. And the Mishnah really could be divided into two sections, right? After the heading in the Mishnah of Ezu Neshech Ezu Tarbis. So what is Neshech and what is Tarbis? And as we already discussed and decided, the Gemara quoted Rava back on Samach Aleph Amud Beis. Truth be told is that really... In the bottom of Samach Amud Beis, truth be told, there are two lavim. But the two lavim really reflect just an interest-bearing loan. So the Torah uses the two different terminologies, but truth be told is that Neshech and Tarbis is really two lavim in the Torah. And then the Mishnah then goes on to give examples. And really, let's point to the cutoff of the Mishnah between the first part and the second part. The first part of the Mishnah, Ezu Neshech, when the Mishnah introduces us to Neshech, so the Mishnah first gives examples of giving a simple interest-bearing loan. And at the time, I give you 4 dinarim with the expectation that you're going to get, with the understanding that you're going to give me 5. Okay, or I give you 2 sa of wheat with the understanding that you're going to give me 3. So anytime there is a contractual agreement that you're going to give me more than what I give you, so that's ribbis min haTorah, that's ribbis. And then, and the Mishnah then went on to say, the Ezu Tarbis, what is an example of Tarbis? And the Mishnah then gives an example. Really, truth of the matter is, at this point in time in the Mishnah, we have hit a cutoff point. Meaning, when the Mishnah starts off Ezu Tarbis, even though, as the Gemara already acknowledged, the word ribbis is a reference to the Isser Torah of lending with interest, the example now given in the Mishnah is an Isser de Rabbanon, we would call Avak Ribbis. It's a, literally the dust of ribbis. Meaning, it's a ribbis de Rabbanon example given to us in the Mishnah, and this really is a cutoff point. I'd like to just for a moment go over the case of the Mishnah one more time. We're going to spend a lot of time today and tomorrow going over this example in the Mishnah. So let's just keep familiarizing ourselves with the second case of the Mishnah. Beperes Ketzad Laka Chimenu Chitim Bediner Zahav Hakur. What happened was is that I made a purchase of wheat. I bought a kur of wheat, which is 30 sa'ah, and I bought it for dinar zahav. I bought it for a golden dinar. Now, a golden dinar is equivalent to 25 silver dinarim. So in terms of currency, the price that you should have in your head is 25 silver dinarim, which is the equivalent. V'chein ashar. And the Mishnah then points out that, truth be told, is that that was the market value at the time, which you, as we'll be seeing over the course of today and tomorrow, is an extraordinarily important factor to this whole discussion. Amdu chitim balam dinarim. Now what happened was is that the wheat went up in price down, and the wheat goes from 25 silver dinarim up to 30 silver dinarim. So it goes up a considerable amount. So Amar lo, now at this point in time, again, the Mishnah doesn't say all this, but we're going to be speaking it out today and tomorrow. At this point in time, there was no violation of the Isser of Ribbis, not on a Daraisa level, not on a Darabana level. Why? Because you see, what happened was I affronted him money. In other words, this is a forward contract. I affronted him the money for the wheat with the expectation that he's going to give me the wheat. The Mishnah made it very clear that that this was a market value at the time. So even though I didn't receive the wheat in exchange for the payment at the time, nevertheless, it was the market value. That was the Yatsa Hashar that the Mishnah mentions. And so therefore, it was the fair market value at the time was 25. And so therefore, I purchased it from 25. Now, the fact that it went up to 30, it's not going to be a violation of any kind of ribbis. And the fact that he's going to be paying me now based on our original transacted price, that's not going to be a violation as well. Why should that be? We're going to discuss that in more detail over the course of this morning. Again, I just want to go over the case. So now the buyer says to the seller, look, I gave you the money, I bought the wheat, you owe me a kur of wheat, meaning that's what we contracted to. Now, I want the wheat because truth of the matter is that now that the price of wheat went up, so I want my wheat so that I can make a purchase and I want to buy wine. So, Amar lo harei chitecha asuyas alayk b'shloshim. So now the seller says to the buyer, well, let's do the following. I owe you the wheat, but why don't we convert the wheat now into an obligation? And that I'll owe you now 30. 30 silver dinarim, which is what the current wheat equivalency is. Meaning he owes him 30 sa'a of wheat, and currently the 30 sa'a of wheat is equivalent to 30 dinarim, silver dinarim. So he says, why don't we convert that obligation into a financial obligation? And truth be told, is that now I will give you, or I will owe you, the wine equivalent to 30 silver dinarim. V'harei lechatzli behem yayin, v'yayin ein lo. And then the Mishnah points out that currently the seller doesn't have any wine on his possession. So the Mishnah is giving this as an example of ribis derabanan. Okay. There are many things to consider in this example that was given to us by the Mishnah. Again, I just wanted to go over the case right now just so that we have some more familiarity.
What's the difference? He has a wine and he doesn't get it. He has a wine and he gives him 30 versus 25.
Right. Right. So again, we're gonna discuss. Okay. That's at the end of today and the beginning of tomorrow is a lengthy discussion in the Gemara regarding exactly what happened in that case in the Mishnah. So as we now are on Samech Aleph Amud Beis, and we are starting now the Gemara's discussion. So the Gemara says now the introduction of the second case of the Mishnah. Here's examples of ribbis. What do you mean? Here are examples of ribbis. The first examples in the Mishnah of five dinarim for four dinarim and three sa'a for two sa'a. Those are also examples of ribbis. We already pointed out ribbis means an interest-bearing loan. So Amar Rabbi Abau. So there is a cutoff point in the Mishnah, but what does that cutoff represent? So the Gemara is going to give a couple of suggestions. Amar Rabbi Abau ad kan shel Torah mikan ve'elach shel divrehim. V'chein Amar Rava ad kan shel Torah mikan ve'elach shel divrehim. So the first pshat in the Gemara, which is very straightforward, is that, yeah, the cutoff point in this Mishnah signifying the former examples are ribis daraisa, simple, structured, interest-bearing loans. I'm going to give you four, you're going to give me back five at a later point in time. I'm going to give you two, you'll give me back three at a later point in time. That's ribis daraisa. And this example, given in the next case in the Mishnah, where what we're going to do is I'm going to make a purchase from you, but it's a forward contract. In other words, I'm not going to take the goods right now, I'll take the goods at a later point in time. The goods went up in value under certain circumstances. I cannot receive the goods at a later point in time. And again, the Mishnah's case is a little complex, but the basic idea is that if the product went up in value and by me taking it, so that would constitute a form of ribis, a ribis derabanan. That is one pshat in the Mishnah. Very good. So the first half of the Mishnah is ribis derais, the second half is ribis derabanan. Then the Gemara goes on to express another differentiation. Ad kan yachin rush of yabish tzaddik. So the second pshat in the Mishnah is the following. Pasuk ani of which the Gemara uses to describe the following scenario. Sometimes a Rasha will prepare something so that the tzaddik can enjoy it. Okay. In general, right? What exactly is the application of that basic idea? There are other times in the Gemara where the Gemara quotes this, but for our purposes right now, here's how the Gemara is understanding this idea. The dad was a loan shark, lending money with interest to other Jews. And then dad dies. As we will learn over the course of today's daf, so there is no obligation upon the son to return the interest to its rightful owner, meaning there is no rightful owner. The son can keep the money. So this would be an example of the pasuk in Iyov, Yachin Rasha, V'yabish Tzaddik, meaning the Rasha prepares, meaning he's a Rasha because he's lending with interest to other Jews, but meanwhile, the son who got all that money, so he benefited from the action of the Rasha. Okay, so ad kan v'sulo. Now the Gemara says, "Now wait one second. Let's slow down." So the first half of the Mishnah is that the son can enjoy the benefits of his father's illegal activity. The Gemara says, "Well, that's true in the Reisha. That's also true in the Seifa as well. In fact, it's even more true in the Seifa because let's think this through." If by ribis daraisa the son can enjoy the benefits of interest-bearing loan, so in the case of ribis derabanan, so for sure the son can benefit. So ella afilu ad kan yachin rasha v'yabish tzaddik. So the Gemara says, okay. So what we're going to have to say is, even the, yes, it is a break point between the first half and the second half of the Mishnah, but really what we meant is that even in the first case, the son can benefit, reap the benefits of these interest-bearing loans that dad lent to other Jews. And another pshat in the Gemara, Aikan Ribbis Kitzutza Mikamba Eila Chavak Ribbis, which is basically the same idea the Gemara expressed earlier, that previously it was Ribbis Kitzutza, which is the terminology we're going to see time and again describing Ribbis Daraisa, versus the second case in the Mishnah, which is Ribbis She'ina Kitzutza, or the Gemara's terminology is Avak Ribbis. You'll see a lot of these, there's a lot of expressions that describe Ribbis Midrabanan. I'm sure there are subtle distinctions between them, but basically for our purposes we can keep it simple and we'll just simply view it as Ribbis Darabanan. So period. Adkan. So basically, in the last four lines of Gemara, all the Gemara did was make a demarcation between the first case of the Mishnah, the second case of the Mishnah, and basically the difference is the first case is Daraisa, the second case is Darabanan, and then what we just learned is that at least according to one opinion, according to all opinions, and both Ribbis Daraisa and Ribbis Darabanan, if the lender dies and all that ill-gotten gain goes to the children don't have to give it back to the borrowers. Amar Rav Elazar, Ribbis Kitzutza Yotze B'Dayanim. Avak Ribbis and Yotze B'Dayanim. So the Gemara starts off now, at least according to Rav Elazar, with a very major nafkamina between Ribbis D'Oraisa versus Ribbis D'Rabbanan. And that is the following. Can the borrower take the lender to court to demand back the interest that was paid? So, according to Rav Elazar, it depends. If it was Ribbis D'Oraisa, so that the lender violated the Isra of the Torah Ribbis, the Isra of the Torah of Ribbis, so then the answer is, according to Rav Elazar, yes, he can. He can take the lender to court in order to get back his interest. If it was only a violation of Ribbis D'Rabbanan, the answer is going to be no. And Rav Yochanan Amar Filo Ribbis Kitzutza Eino Yotze B'Dayanim. Rav Yochanan actually goes one step further. Rav Yochanan says that even if it's Ribbis D'Oraisa, it can't be taken back in court. Meaning, the lender violated Nisr in the Torah, but at this point, from that point going forward, there's nothing more to be done. Once the interest is collected, so then it's a violation of Ribbis, it's a violation of the Torah, with no chance for hishavon, no chance for any kind of payback. Now, Amar Rav Yitzchak Maitamid Rav Yochanan. So what we're going to do now is as follows. Not a svara, but drushas in the Torah, or in the Navi, that give an indication that Rav Yochanan's right. That once you are a lender lending to another Jew with interest, and you collected the interest, that's it. You violated the Isser, but there's nothing you could do to take it back, so to say. You can't give back the interest and undo that which you have done. So my time to Rav Yochanan across, so the Gemara is going to quote a number of sources supporting Rav Yochanan. Number one, a pasuk in Yecheskel. B'neshech nasa v'tarbis lakach v'chai lo yichya es kol ha-toevos ha-eila asa. So the pasuk in Yecheskel goes on to describe, and Rashi quotes the end of the pasuk. The Gemara does not. Most yumasta ma boyeh. So the person is to be put to death. Now the pasuk in Yecheskel does not actually mean that this is a capital crime, because it's not a capital crime. It's a law in the Torah. But what the pasuk in Yecheskel means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take up the issue from this point going forward. Meaning it's akin. It's similar to Yechayev Misa, but not to be taken literally. But anyway, Lamisa Nitam Veloli Yishavon. And so what the Gemara now is explaining in defense of Rav Yochanan is that the Pasuk in Yecheskel is teaching us that when a person violates Ribbis, so what is the punishment? Misa, again, Misa B'Dei Shemayim in this context, but not Yishavon, but not paying back. That is one possible source for the Shita of Rav Yochanan. A second. Rav Adabav Amar Makra Atikach Mito Nech V'Sarbis V'Yerisim Elokecha. The Torah says, don't take the interest from him, and you have to fear God. And again, the consequence or the purpose of this Isser is for Yira, is for fearing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's not for the purpose of Yishavon. Okay, a little bit unclear to me exactly how this drasha works, but still, the basic idea being is that its goal after being violated is not to pay back. Another possibility, Rav Amram Migufa Dekrash Mi'ali Mos Yumasta Mavbo Yiyah Hukshu Mavei Ribbis L'Shof Chedamim. Rava turns back to the same pasuk that was quoted by Rabbi Yitzchak, an explanation of Rabbi Yochanan, when the Navi in Yechezkel describes that the person is subject to Misa, what the Navi is doing is it's making an equation, an equivalency, between lending with interest and murder. When you murder, you know you can't take it back. Okay, you can't undo it. Same thing with lending with interest, even though it's different, obviously, even though in theory you could give it back. But the Navi is creating the equivalency to teach us that, halachically speaking, there would be nothing good done, nothing undone by returning back the interest that you paid. Okay, so these are all three different suggestions in terms of explaining Shitas Rav Yochanan, that once you lend with interest, so it what you have done is done, you violate this in the Torah, and it is undoable. I'm Rav Nachman, sorry I skipped I was good. I'm Rav Nachman, Yitzchak, my Talmud, Rav Elazar, Amar Kra. We now turn to the top of Samach Beis and Manalf. The Gemara now is going to offer an explanation of Rav Elazar, that if you lend with interest a mina Torah, meaning it's ribis ketsutza, so you can pay back the interest in order to undo that which you've done. V'chay achicha imach, so ahadolei kihech deneche. So the pasuk in Bahar tells us that you have to allow your brother to live with you, meaning make it financially viable. Don't charge him interest, because once you charge him interest, it's no longer financially viable, and let him live with you. So what if you charge him interest? So Rav Elazar says, good. So there's still a way to support the person, that is by giving him back the interest that you charged him, so that he can live together with you. That's how Rav Elazar understands the pasuk in Bahar, and that's why, according to Rav Elazar, even though you violated Ribbis Min HaTorah, by giving him back the money, you've done that which you've done. Rav Yochanan, hai v'chai chich amach mai avilei. Now, it's Rav Yochanan that is a very clear indication in the Torah that when you charge with interest, you can give him back the money and allow him to live with you. And why wouldn't you arrive at that conclusion from that pasuk? So, mibayle lechidatanya. So, Rav Yochanan will tell you, no, I already have that pasuk utilized for a different limud. And that is the following. So, two people are walking on a very long journey, and one of them is holding a jug of water. Now here is the impossible decision that needs to be made. If two of them are drinking from the same jug of water, they're both going to die. And if one person drinks from the water, so he's going to arrive back, one person will survive. So basically there's only enough water for one person to survive. What do you do? So one opinion, that of Ben Petora. Where else can he be found? I happen not to know that off the top of my head. But the two of them, this is a brisa, by the way. So these are Tanaim. One shouldn't see the other person die. Let the two of them drink from the same. And if the fate is they're both going to die, so fine. So they're both going to die. Achabar Rabbi Kiva Valimeid. Rabbi Kiva comes along. Rabbi Kiva says, no, that correction is patently wrong, and that is v'chay chichimach. Quoting the pasuk that we just learned together, that chayecha kodem l'chayecha vercha. In other words, the Torah says that your brother should live together with you. But rooted in that principle of he should be living together with you is that first and foremost, you should be living. And then after you survive, then see to it that other people survive as well. But first, in other words, there is a presumption in that pasuk that you have to survive first. So if given the impossible decision of what do you do with that one jug of water that you currently possess, you should be drinking it, even if it means your friend's going to die. V'chai achicha imach is coming to tell you, you first, and then the other person. Okay, so and that's the teaching of Rabbi Akiva, and that's where Rav Yochanan learns that from that pasuk, and that's why Rav Yochanan can't use that pasuk to teach me a halacha in Ribbis. Where do we stand right now? Machlokes Amarayim. Whether or not, if you lend interest on a d'oraisa level, ribis ketsutza, whether or not it is returnable. Of course, it's always returnable. Are you going to undo the isser that you've done by returning the interest to the borrower? So Rav Yochanan says, it's a helfnish. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't accomplish anything. It's nice. Certainly, you know, your reputation may be resurrected, but it doesn't do anything vis-a-vis the Isser. The Isser has been violated, that's it. And Rav Elazar says, no. Much like a gazlan, when he steals v'heshiv his gzela, he can undo that which he has done. So too, in Ribbis, so you just simply return it, and that is the Shita of Rav Elazar. Meitzvah, the Gemara quotes the Brisa is going to challenge one of these positions. Okay, so the Brisa over here is quoted as saying that the children inherited money, and they know that dad lent with interest to other Jews, and they know that a lot of this money is from ill-gotten gains of lending with interest. There is no obligation on the part of the children to return the interest, even if they know who the borrower is. There's no obligation to do so. Stop. That's the end of the. It's not the end of the brisa. But what are we getting out now from this brisa? That ha'avim chayim lahachzir. What seemingly the brisa's point is that had dad still been alive, he would be obligated to return, and this would seem to be a very strong proof for Rav Elazar. So the Gemara says, "Bedinu davo nami lo mechav lahachzir." No, truth be told, is that dad had no obligation to return as well. So then, if that's true, why would the brisa be focusing on the children? The brisa should be telling us that which is actually a bigger chiddush, that dad doesn't have to return the ill-gotten gains. Va'aydi dekabai lemisa seifa. No, the truth of the matter is that the brisa couldn't maybe. I don't want to say should have said that, because the Brisa obviously had a point to make. The Brisa could have said that. The Brisa had a different point that it wanted to accentuate. And that's why the Brisa was focusing on the children. And what point did the Brisa want to accentuate? A contrast between money and goods. This is now the second half of the Brisa. Where dad leaves for the children either a cow or a coat or anything specific that dad stole in order to gain. So now the children, because it's a specific item, the children have to return the stolen item. Why? Because of the mitzvah of kibud av. In other words, they want to honor their father. They were to walk around with this para, meaning it's a cow. Everyone's going to see the cow and everyone's going to remind themselves, hey, you know the story behind that cow? Let me tell you. Right? That cow was inherited by those children and really the dad stole it, and then as long as we're on the topic of their dad, they'll say other things about the dad. So in other words, in order to honor their father, so they have to return the specific item. As opposed to money, where money is money. When you spend the money, there's no story behind money. It's currency. But if it's a specific item, so that they don't keep reminding the public of what dad did, so therefore they have to return the item, the stolen item, to the victim. So, Taninami Resha Bididhu, so the Gemara says, that's why the first half of the Brisa was talking about the children. But Enachinami, what could be is that even if dad was still alive, he would not have to return the ribbis, like the position of Rav Yochanan. So right now we have not proved anything from the Brisa vis-a-vis whether or not the lender has to return the interest to the borrower. Now the Gemara over here points out, same point that we made back in Baba Kama, the Gemara is going to make it over here. So the Gemara says, now, as from the mitzvah standpoint of kibud av, they have to return the cow or the cloak that was stolen from dad that they inherited. For the Gemara says, really, they have to fulfill the mitzvah of kibud av? The Torah says that you're not allowed to curse somebody who is ba'amcha, a member of your nation. And the Gemara says, ba'osem ma'aseh imach. Amach. That's only when he behaves like a member of your nation. Meaning that there's only a isser in the Torah of cursing another Jew when he's behaving like a Jew. But if he's not behaving like a Jew, if he's not conforming, if he's not doing Torah and mitzvahs, so then there's no isser. And what the Gemara is saying, pretty candidly, is that there's no mitzvah of kibud av when the father was a Rasha. So, and over here, clearly the father was a Rasha. He was a thief. So, why would the Brisa have to say that for the mitzvah of kibud av, they have to return the stolen item? Dad was a thief. Why do they have to do that? So the Gemara says, "Kedam Rav Pinchas Mishmei Derava B'Shasa Tshuva." So the Gemara says, "Hachinami B'Shasa Tshuva." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but before Dad died, Dad did Tshuva." So the Gemara then asks the obvious question: "Iasa Tshuva My Baigabe." So if he did Tshuva, you know, part of the Tshuva process is to return the item that you stole. In fact, if you're stealing, that pretty much does sum up what Tshuva is: returning the item that which you stole. So the Gemara says, "Shalom Hispik Lahachzer." So the Gemara says, well, the case is an extraordinarily limited scenario in which dad actually made a commitment to do tshuva. Dad, I guess he declared it. In other words, the thought by itself would mean nothing. But he declared to his family, you know, I've been a thief my whole life. It's not right. I'm going to return everything that I stole. And then, before given the opportunity to do it, so then he died. We will assume that his heart was in the right place and he actually was a Baal Tshuva, even though he didn't do the action of Eishev Zegzela. And only under those limited circumstances then are the children required to return the items which dad stole. It would certainly seem from this Gemara, which we have now come to a close, it would certainly seem that Gemara says it pretty straightforward. There's no mitzvah of kibbut av, or for that matter, aim, when either mom and dad are rishayim. That's what it would seem like from our Gemara. The Rambam says very clearly that there's a mitzvah of kibbut av aim, even when your parents are rishayim. And what do you do to defend the Rambam in light of this Gemara? So there are a number of ways to defend the Rambam. Anyway, the Shulchan Aruch also says it as well, that even if your parents are Rishayim, there's still a mitzvah of kibbut av aim, despite the fact that this Gemara seems to indicate otherwise. Okay. Meisvei. There's obviously more to say on that topic. We're going to go on. Meisvei. Hagazlanim amav ebribis afa pishigav amachzirin. So the Gemara quotes another Braisa. And the Braisa says that if you're a Gazan or if you lend with interest, even though you collected, you must return. So the Gemara says, wait one second, can we slow down on what the Bryce is talking about? Gazlan amai, alfa pishigavu ika. Now, when we talk about a Gazlan, even though the Gazlan collected, there's no collection by a Gazlan. Your two options are either you steal or you don't steal. there's no collection. E gazel gazel, e lo gazel gazlan and karis lehu. Look, if he stole, so then we have the right to call him a gazlan. If he didn't steal, even if he says to everybody, hey, I plan on stealing, like in other words, you're not a gazlan unless you actually do the act of stealing. So, ela emas gazlan in my new mavibribis. So, clearly, what the Bryce's intent is that we're talking about a specific type of gazlan, notably a lender with interest. And the Braisa says that even though they collected, they have to return it. Okay, good. The Braisa over here seems to clearly indicate that when you collect the interest, you must return it. So this Braisa certainly would fall on the side of Rav Elazar, the Amora, who says that when you have ill-gotten gains of interest, you have to return it. Unlike Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara says, Tanahi. So the Gemara says, okay, push comes to shove, and push did come to shove, yeah. Meaning the Bryce is very clearly in favor of the Shita Rav Elazar. So we're going to now say that it's actually a Machlokas HaTanayim as well. So meaning now we are learning that it's Machlokas HaMarayim, Machlokas Tanayim, whether or not the lender with interest needs to return the interest, whether returning the interest will have any efficacy whatsoever. So Detanya, the Gemara quotes the following Braisa: Reb Nechemya, Revi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Putrin esamava v'esa'arev mimneshiyesh b'em kumaseh. So, according to the Tanaim of Reb Nechemya, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, to the lender with interest and to the guarantor. Now, the guarantor over here is a little tricky to understand, because the guarantor is not on the lending side; he's on the borrowing side, and he may be paying the interest, he may not be paying the interest. But for our purposes right now, let's just focus on the lender. I know the Bryce here includes the guarantor as well. It's tricky. Let's just focus on the lender. The Bryce says that as far as the lender is concerned, we exempt him. And presumably the exemption over here is from Malkus. Because why? Komasei. Because he can return back the interest. Meaning, here's the basic rule that we know. We learned this back in Malkus. Or I should say it's really coming more in the front end. But we will learn this in Malkus. And the Gemara says in a number of places, is that when you have an law in the Torah, ha-nitak la'aseh, where you violate the law, but there's a way to remedy the situation, so then you're not subject to Malkus. So over here, there's a way to remedy the situation. How do you remedy the situation? Return the interest that you borrowed. So my kumase, la misham darmin lo kum aduro aduro. And the kumase is return the interest that you took. Mechlal de Tanakama sava la b'nei adurninu. Now, they are arguing with the Tanakama. In other words, there's an implicit Tanakama in that brisa, even though we didn't see it inside. And the Tanakama who says that they're subject to Malkus is obviously of the opinion that once you lend with interest, that's it. The story is over. The Isser has been violated. And now the only thing left is the classic punishment for lav in the Torah, which is Malkus. So clearly now these two Tanayim, or three, meaning the Tanakama versus these two, are basically arguing over this issue of when you lent, after lending with interest, is there any point in returning the interest back to the borrower? So the Gemara says, "Lo, my komasei lekrosh tara." The Gemara offers a different way to explain the brisa, and that is maybe what they're arguing about is there any benefit? In other words, the loan was made. It was an interest-bearing loan. And over here, perhaps the remedy is, we're talking at before the point of collection, and is there going to be a remedy in tearing up the shtar? tearing up the loan document. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, I don't understand. We have a classic debate in terms of when you have a note bearing obligation, right? A shtar chov. So is it viewed as something which has already been collected, or is it viewed as a collectible? I'd say almost looks like an accounting question in terms of how to view an account receivable, and where to file that in the accounting. But it's a halachic discussion, and it's a question of how do we view a note bearing obligation, something that is collected already, ki'ilu, it's kegavu damer, no. And as far as our discussion over here, it plays a very important role. Because if the interest-bearing loan is considered collected already, so then the isser has already been violated even before you actually collected it. Masha ein kein, if it's not viewed as collected already, so what have you done? Meaning, although you have laid the groundwork to violate the Torah, you have not yet violated the Torah as of yet. And that's the Gemara's point exactly. If we do not view it as it's collected already, halo avev lo klum, then essentially what you have done so far is, obviously, you've done a lot, but halachically considered, you have done nothing yet. Meaning, you lent the money, you wrote up a note, the note bears interest on it, but we're talking about now receiving malchus. You haven't done anything yet. The isser is only going to be violated when you actually collect the interest. So the Gemara says, "Olam kesavar shtar homi legavus lavka gavui dami." So the Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe the truth of the matter is that the way we're going to view a note is that it is not yet collected, and. No, it's not collected. Lavka gavu dami. Vaha kamash malan deshuma milsehi. And over here, even though you didn't actually collect the interest as of yet, still it's significant to have a note against the borrower. It is considered shuma. In other words, shuma is the general term the Gemara uses to describe an appraisal. Over here, appraisal maybe not the best word to describe it, but basically he now has an outstanding obligation against you because of the note, and that is halachically significant, and therefore tearing up the note would also be halachically significant as well. And the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what we're saying is absolutely correct, because please consider. Hachinami misabra tadan. Ve'elo ovrim below sase. We will learn this at the end of the perek. Who's in violation of this law when there is an interest-bearing loan? So, hamava v'alova ha'arev ha'edim. It is an all-inclusive isser, meaning the lender, the borrower. Now, we already established in the beginning of the parak, lender and borrower are both going to be prohibited. The lender, the borrower, the guarantor, meaning if there's a guarantor on the loan, and witnesses also are going to be subject to the law of the Torah. The Gemara says, now, Bishlam akulu avon maisa. Now, the Gemara says, now, as far as everyone's concerned, everyone has some sort of action, meaning the lender is going to be receiving, the borrower is going to be paying, the arev in theory could potentially be paying. Everyone has an action point where we understand how they're violating the law and the Torah is subject to malchus. What are the edim doing? The edim are standing, they're watching. What else are they doing? Meaning, obviously, they're aiding and abetting and they're facilitating. But where the question over here, it's a pointed question. What are they doing in order to be subject to malchus? So the Gemara says, "Ela edim ayavod, ela lav shmamina, deshuma milsehi shmamina." The Gemara says is that once they create the groundwork in order for the loan to be collected and the interest to be collected, that is considered significant, and therefore the edim themselves are also going to be subject to the law and the Torah of interest, and they're going to be subject to malchus.
Isn't what they're doing like drama? Then,
aiding
abetting more like,
Right, in other words, right, but there's this, exactly, but in of itself, that's the Gemara's question. And the Gemara's answer is that this Shuma, this idea of Shuma, is that once you create an obligation, that is milsa, it's significant, it's so significant that even though they're just standing there, because they're facilitating, therefore they're also going to be subject to the law as well. Okay, so Adkan, that brings us to the end of the Gemara's discussion. So again, machlokus amorayim, whether or not once you lend with interest, so Is it something that can be paid back? So machlokas amarayim between Rabbi Elazar and Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that once it's done on a daraisa and on the rabban level, and there is nothing to be done after that point in time, and you're just simply subject to malchus, which and it's not a small thing. But in other words, you cannot undo that which you've done. Rabbi Eliezer, on the other hand, makes a distinction between ribbis daraisa versus ribbis darabanan. If it's ribbis daraisa, it needs to be returned, meaning if the lender would like to do tshuva, he can do so, and he can do so by returning the interest in that which he took. If it's ribbis derabbanan, so then there's no need to return it. There may be a moral and ethical obligation, but just from a baseline halacha, so then there's no obligation to return it. The Gemara debated over the course of basically the first amud of today's daf, in terms of which position is more mistaber, and which fit into the brisa is better, and the Gemara leaves it inconclusive. The halacha sides with Rabbi Eliezer on this regard. It does need to be returned on daraisa, not on ribbis derabbanan. Next, a statement made by Rav Safra. Am Rav Safra kol shiilu b'dinei motzien malve. I'm sorry, mi love la malve b'dinei no machzirin mi malve la love. The statement of Rav Safra is a fantastic contrast between our laws and their laws. Meaning, basically, there's an inverse relationship between the way we view interest and the way they view interest. Meaning the non-Jews. And basically, he sums it up like this. If there was a question of interest in a non-Jewish court, and they say to the borrower, you got to pay it, so then reflexively, our laws would demand that we say to the borrower, you don't have to pay it because it's interest. Meaning, simply put, in other words, they allow, in their courts, they allow interest. And as we discussed already in the beginning of the parak, nothing inherently wrong with charging interest. It's not unethical, it's not immoral. But basically, if you want to know whether or not it's usur, so look at their court, see when they say to the borrower, oh, you got to pay it. And then we turn around to the lender and we say, you can't collect it. And not only that, in fact, if you collect it, you got to give it back. Okay. So that is the statement of Rav Safra, a contrast between basically how they view interest versus how we view interest. And let's do the statement one more time. Am Rav Safra, kol shiilu b'dineihem motzien mi love l'malveh. So if on their terms, they would say to the borrower, you got to pay the lender, because you agreed to that interest. B'dineinu machzirin mimava lalova. It goes one step further than, by the way, the way I originally presented it. We say to the lender, you got to give that back to the borrower. Now, koshi lo b'dineinu mimava lalova, b'dineinu machzirin mimava lalova. So, I'm sorry, and the converse is also true. Meaning, if they don't require the borrower to pay the lender, so then we're not going to require the lender to return it back to the borrower. Okay, these are the statements of Rav Safra. So basically, an inverse relationship between what would happen in their court, and basically the opposite would happen in our court. So Amalei Abai Rav Yosef Aklalahu. Now Abai says to Rav Yosef, this is not always true. Okay, let's first consider Sa'abisa. Sa'abisa is the term that we're going to hear a lot in the course of the fifth parak of Bava Metzia, and that is commodity exchange. In other words, I'll give you X amount of commodity, and in exchange you'll give me back X amount of commodity. Not a different amount, same amount. As we will learn later in the parak, that is ribbis midrabbanan, rabbinic ribbis. The concern is that after I gave you the commodity of X, which was valued at 100, at a later point in time it may go up to 120, and even though you're returning to me the same amount of commodity, but it may be greater in price, and so therefore ribbis midrabbanan. This is what's called sah b'sah. So the Gemara says, "Vary sah b'dineihem motzien milav l'malveh." So there in their courts, so if the question came up, you know, I borrowed X commodity from him, do I have to pay it back? In their court, they're going to be like, of course. Right, meaning...
But wouldn't you have to pay back in their deen with additional sa'ah to cover the interest?
No. In other words, no. If it's a commodity exchange or a commodity loan, so whatever I borrow from you, that's what I have to pay back. So, in other words, in our courts, we wouldn't allow it. In their courts, they would allow it. Uvidinenu ein machzirin mimava lalova. Now, in our courts, now the commodity loan like this should not be structured. But remember, go back to the rule that we started off today's daf with, and that is if it's ribis de rabbanon and it was violated, the malva does not have to return to the loan, and that's according to everybody. The only machlok between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan is only by ribis de araisa, not by ribis de rabbanon. Is ribis de rabbanon. So this would be. This wouldn't fit into Rav Safra's rule. Because Rav Safra says that if in their case they would say to the lover, you have to pay it, in our case, we would say to the malva, you have to return it. But that's not true by Sa Basa. So Amarle Ina Bataris Pikadan Asaliade. So the Gemara says, well, you're right, but leave that case out of the discussion. Because, you know, when they are doing a commodity loan, not a currency loan, and they're lending X amount of commodity, they don't view it as a loan, but rather. Sorry. Okay. They don't view it as a loan, but rather they view it as a picardon. They view it as a deposit. Okay. So Amale Ravina la Ravashi. Vahare Mashkaanta below Nachyasa. So the Gemara says, okay, let's give another example where it doesn't fit. Oh, you don't have to worry about that. It's fine. It's I appreciate it. So so the Gemara says, well, why don't we consider the following? If, let's say, property was used as a security. So that means that I lend money, and I take land as a security. Okay. And let's say the land is yields fruit. So now, what do I need to do every year that the loan is outstanding? So whatever fruit I take, I need to deduct that off the loan, of course. Because if I don't deduct the fruit off the loan, so basically when I get paid back, what did I get paid back? I got paid back my principal and I got all the fruit from the field. That's interest. So granted, but that's not ribis d'araisa, but still, it's ribis. So what do I have to do is that when I take fruit off the field, so I have to deduct that off the principal. Okay. So now the Gemara says, "Debidineim otziyemi lava lemalva." Now, in their courts, you know what they would say to the borrower? They would say to the borrower, "Sorry, you got to pay that back," meaning that the lender is entitled to the fruit and to the full principal value of the loan. That's what would happen in their court. And meanwhile, in our court, we'll get to it in just a moment. We'll get to it right now. Now, in our courts, we would not tell the lender to give it back to the borrower. Now, again, let's go over this. Why not? Why wouldn't we tell the lender to give it back to the borrower? All the fruit that he took over the course of over the life of the loan. The reason is, again, it's the same reason. Because this is not ribis d'araisa. This is ribis d'rabbanan. Let's keep saying this. We'll keep hammering this point again and again. Ribis d'araisa is only when, at the origination of the loan, there was an agreement between lender and borrower that you're going to be paying me back more. Over here, I'm just simply holding the land. The land may yield fruit. The land also may not yield fruit. In other words, this is not ribis d'araisa. So if you take the fruit, so then it does violate avak ribis. It's ribis d'rabbanan, but it's not ribis d'araisa. So therefore, we do not tell the lender. The lender should not take it, but if he did so, we will not tell the lender to return it. So Amarlei ina b'taras vini asali adayu. Again, the Gemara says you're right, but leave this out of the discussion as well, because again, they don't view this as a loan. Rather, when property is taken as security against a loan, they actually view it as a sale. Okay, so that means now that over the duration of the loan, the lender is no longer a lender. During that duration, the lender actually bought the property with an agreement that I'm going to sell it back to the borrower in the event that the borrower can make good on the loan. So okay, so once you structure the deal that way, so then it's not even interest. In other words, it's the lender's property. He's not a lender. He's an owner. So the Gemara says, so you leave that out of the discussion as well. So basically, even though there are scenarios in which don't fit into Rav Safra's rule, but the Gemara says it's because they view them structurally as different. They view the case of the possession as a pikadon. They view the land as a sale. Okay. So Ella. So the Gemara says, okay, now that we've clearly outlined and identified that these are cases that don't fit neatly into our discussion, but only because they're viewed differently. So now, what was the point that Rav Safra was trying to make? In other words, we took the exclusions and we moved them out. Okay, wonderful. Rav Safra obviously was trying to speak to an idea. Ella, koshi lebedineim bedineim dekam Rav Safra my asalash minan. So that's the Gemara's question. So what is Rav Safra coming to teach us? Hachi asalash minan. Koshi lebedineim motzi milov lamalve bedineim machzirin mimava lalova my nil beribis kitzutza uched Rav Elazar. So basically, you know what Rav Safra is teaching us? That he sides with Rav Elazar. That when it's ribis daraisa. So, in their courts, in the non-Jewish courts, so they're going to say to the borrower, look, you agreed to the terms. In other words, you said you're going to pay back more than what you borrowed. It was an interest-bearing loan, but you agreed to it. So they're going to say, you got to pay. In our courts, we turn to the Malva and we say to the Malva, you have to return it. Because Rav Safra sides with Rav Elazar. Okay, that's an important point. And next, what about the converse? Kol she'ilu b'dinei me'motzim b'yadeinu. I'm sorry. Kol she'ilu b'dineihem ein motziim b'dineinu ein machzirim ribis mukdemes ribis mucheres. Now, if in their court they would not say to the borrower that you have to pay. So in our court, we would not say to the lender you have to return it, and that would be describing either ribis mukdemes or ribis mucheres. Okay, two examples of ribis which are derabanan. Let's go over both of these examples. Again, they're going to be discussed at the end of the fifth parak. But we just to get our heads around these ideas. Rashi writes, "Ribis mukdemes, ribis mucheres, v'shulim asnisin, ketani lot." One of the last mishnayos of the fifth parak. The habitaris ribis yaiv le v'dineim im lona san im motzin sharelo pasuk imo. Okay, Rashi over here actually does not give a clear representation of what these are. So let's go over. It's coming up later in the mishnayos. Ribis mukdemes is basically where I'm trying to get a loan out of the guy. He's being a little bit resistant, so I give him a gift. Okay. After I give him the gift, he says to me, you know what? Okay, I'll lend you money. So that's what's called ribis mukdemes. So again, that's not a clear-cut case of ribis because I'm not giving him extra on the loan. I'm just kind of, you know, I'm softening him up first. And then and then he'll lend me the money.
That's like paying point.
Huh?
Like paying
point. Yeah, right, right. Or ribis mu'ucheres. Ribis mu'ucheres is after the origination of the loan, where at the origination there was no agreed interest, but afterwards, maybe he wanted an extension, or maybe he was just simply appreciative, whatever the case was, he then pays you back more. So that is also ribis derabanan. So again, albeit aser, but it's ribis derabanan, not ribis deraisa, and so therefore the malva does not have to return it. That is the point that Rav Safra was making. Okay, let's conclude here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up with a Rav Abaye discussion. Okay, it's good to start this discussion fresh. It's really good. You'll see tomorrow. So anyway, so let's just quickly wrap up what we saw today. We discussed today the break point in the Mishnah between the first case of the Mishnah, the first cases of the Mishnah, the second case of the Mishnah, and essentially first cases are ribis d'oraisa, the second cases are ribis d'rabbanan. A major discussion in the course of the Gemara today, and that when a person violates ribis d'oraisa, is there a mitzvah of hashava? Does he have to return the interest in that which he stole? Machlokas between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan ended up becoming a machlokas tanaim as well, possibly. The Gemara then quoted Rav Safra at the end, who sided with Rav Elazar. The halacha falls like Rav Elazar by ribis d'oraisa. So there's a chance of hashava. There's a chance of returning it by ribis d'rabbanan, not so much so. And then we spent some time today describing children inheriting illicit gains. By money, they don't have to return it. By objects, they do have to return it. But the Gemara says only limited to the scenario in which dad did tshuva. Otherwise, if dad didn't do tshuva, so then there's no mitzvah of kibbutz. Quickly, I pointed out the simple pshat of a Gemara is that there's no mitzvah of kibbutz when your parents are rishayim. Rambam does not say that. Rambam, in fact, goes the other way. And then the statement of Rav Safra, and that is that when you find that in their court they obligate the borrower to pay back the lender, in our court we go the other direction. We tell the lender to return it back to the borrower, and this is basically a nod on Rav Safra's part that he's in agreement with Rabbi Eliezer that by ribis d'oraisa, the lender has to return the ill-gotten gains.